You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Hello and welcome to episode 49 of the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host, Louise, and today's episode is about the Supreme Court of the UK. I'm actually going to talk to you today about a tour that I went on at the Supreme Court a few months ago, and at the same time, I'll tell you about its history, the people who work there, and the type of cases that they hear. Also, if you prefer to read about the Supreme Court, check out my blog post on the top 10 things to do there at studylegalenglish.com/blog. You might want to check that out if you plan to go to London, for example, because the Supreme Court is well worth a visit. Anyway, let's get started. Before I tell you about the tour, I'll give you a little bit of background to the Supreme Court. If I say the County Court of England and Wales, the High Court of England and Wales, the Court of Appeal of England and Wales, and the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom. Can you spot the difference? Of course you can. All of the other courts have got England and Wales on the end, and instead the Supreme Court is called the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom. And as you will have noticed in previous podcast episodes, the UK does not have a single unified legal system. Instead, it has three jurisdictions: England and Wales, Northern Ireland, and Scotland. And all the courts that we've been dealing with so far have been courts of England and Wales. They do not decide cases involving Scotland or Northern Ireland. However, the Supreme Court has jurisdiction over the whole of the UK. It is the highest court of the land, the final national court of appeal, or otherwise referred to as a court of last resort, for all civil and criminal cases from England and Wales and Northern Ireland, and certain cases from Scotland, such as those relating to human rights issues. The Supreme Court does not just hear any type of case. In fact, it hears the most important and high-profile cases, ones which are of general public or constitutional importance. And before getting to the Supreme Court, most cases will have passed through a number of courts, such as the ones we've already talked about before. At these lower levels, the facts of the case will already have been decided. Therefore, at the Supreme Court, justices do not hear witnesses. They don't question the evidence, they don't question the facts. They only question the law and how to apply it to the already decided facts of the case before them. Cases here are normally heard by five justices, and sometimes more when there is a very significant issue being discussed. In any case, there must always be an odd number so that the case can be decided in the majority. Prior to 2009, as I have discussed already before in previous episodes, the Appellate Committee of the House of Lords was the final appellate body in the UK. The House of Lords, as well as having this judicial function, also had a lawmaking function, being the upper house of Parliament. And this meant that law lords who decided cases were also able to vote on legislation being made. The UK was lacking a separation of powers, which is, of course, an important constitutional function to limit the powers of any one part of the executive, judiciary, and legislature and prevent an abuse of power. There were additional problems. Members of the public saw the House of Lords as a closed body. Members of the public weren't able to go and watch cases, and so there was a lack of transparency. And for some people, it could be confusing whether decisions issued by the House of Lords were political or legal in nature. It was clear that changes needed to be made, not just for the structure of the highest court of the land, but also for the location where it sat, to make it more transparent, to make it available to the public to go and watch cases. And When discussions were taking place as to how to reform the House of Lords, Lord Bingham of Cornhill, one of the most senior law lords at the time, stressed the need for transparency and also for the building, for the new home of the Supreme Court, to reflect the core principles of transparency, clarity, and accessibility. So, in 2009, the Supreme Court was established. It was actually established by the Constitutional Reform Act of 2005. However, it began functioning in 2009, and it took up a new home in Middlesex Guildhall, which underwent a £49 million restoration. I'll talk a little bit more about the building, of course, when I talk about the tour. So the 12 law lords from the pre-existing House of Lords were appointed as the justices of the Supreme Court, led by a president. And as of 2017, we have the first female president, Lady Hale. And in fact, now there are three women justices at the Supreme Court. As a side note, there are actually three women who are presidents of the law societies of each jurisdiction in the UK at the moment, for Northern Ireland, Scotland and England and Wales. So if you're a woman in need of some inspiration to get into the legal profession, let these be a role model for you. The changes made to establish the Supreme Court and to put it in a new location meant that for the first time in history, the UK had a complete separation of powers. The Supreme Court was able to continue its work in a far more transparent way. So, after that quick introduction, I'm now going to tell you about my visit to the Supreme Court. A few months ago, I went on a tour of the Supreme Court of Justice. The tour costs £7, £5 for concessions, such as students, and lasts around an hour. If you want to go, I advise you book in advance. However, if you find yourself in central London, the Supreme Court is located on Parliament Square, which is just opposite the Houses of Parliament in Westminster. So you can always pop in without booking a tour and take a look around by yourself. There are plenty of things to see and do on your own, and the court is very accessible, open, and with very friendly and helpful staff. So, when I went, I arrived at around 1:30 p.m, half an hour early for the 2 p.m. tour. This gave me plenty of time to have a look at the outside of the grand Art Nouveau Gothic building called Middlesex Guildhall. The building itself has a long legal history going back almost for 1,000 years, and in the past it has been the location of various different types of courts. At the entrance of the Supreme Court, I pass through the airport-style security checks. These types of checks are quite common nowadays in court buildings and other official buildings. So if you do visit these places, don't take any sharp or dangerous objects. But of course, phones and cameras are fine. After this, I went downstairs to check out the cafe, where it's possible to get a range of drinks and snacks. I also spent some time looking around the exhibition about the Supreme Court. There is lots of information about the Supreme Court's history, the judges, the role it plays, as well as examples of court dress on display and some interactive touch screens to get further information. So then the tour began promptly at 2 p.m. and it was led by the education officer, who spoke very clearly and gave a very informative tour. As the court does not sit on a Friday, I didn't see any hearings, unfortunately. However, this meant that I was able to have a good look around the courtrooms. I could take photos, and we were also able to visit the library, which on other days is closed to the public. So we started by visiting courtroom one, and this is the largest of the courtrooms in the building. If I say the words bright, jolly, fun, eccentric, these probably are not the words you'd immediately associate with a courtroom. But I can tell you that these words could spring to mind if and when you come to the Supreme Court of the UK because of the carpet, which runs throughout and especially in courtroom one. Perhaps a controversial element in the building, the pop art carpet was actually designed by the very same man who designed the front cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. And that designer is Sir Peter Blake. So if you're a Beatles fan, certainly take a look at the carpet. This carpet depicts traditional symbols from England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland in a modern way, and it certainly gives a lively feeling to the courtroom. In fact, throughout the whole of the Supreme Court, you will see these modern and ancient styles sitting side by side, and this also reflects the work of the Supreme Court. Their job is to decide cases of the utmost public importance, developing the laws of the land, and in doing so, they rely on practices and traditions which have been around for centuries. The modernity is also reflected in the fact that all the Supreme Court cases are televised, and so you can watch them live or afterwards on the Supreme Court website. Therefore, if you want to see what a real court case is like, you don't need to rely on TV series. You can actually watch the real deal. Just go to the Supreme Court website, supremecourt.uk, or look them up on YouTube. They've got a brilliant YouTube channel. And to give you an example of a recent important case which was decided in courtroom one, it's the famous Brexit case. Maybe if you pay attention to the news, you will have heard of a case called the Miller case, or its full title is The Crown on the Application of Miller and Another, who are the respondents, against the Secretary of State for Exiting the European Union, who was the appellant. This case questioned whether Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty could be triggered by the government, by the UK government, without prior authority of the UK Parliament. With most treaties, the UK government has a prerogative power to withdraw from treaties as it sees fit. It doesn't need the consent of Parliament. However, it cannot exercise that power if it would change UK laws, unless it is authorised by Parliament, because of course, we've heard this quite a lot before, Parliament is sovereign. In the Miller case, the court issued its judgment in favour of Miller, the respondent, with a majority of 8-3 on the 24th of January 2017. It stated that EU law was a special type of UK law, and that when the UK leaves the EU, this part of law will be lost. Therefore, the UK government cannot trigger Article 50 without an Act of Parliament. So that gives you an idea of the kind of very important cases that happen in the Supreme Court. Even the way that courtroom one is set out is quite modern. The judge's bench at the far end is curved in a semicircle, and apparently this is based on the Israeli Supreme Court judge's bench. Something which might surprise you is that the bench is at the same level as those for the barristers. Therefore, in a court case, the judges aren't elevated high above the other participants, looking down on them. They are instead on the same level. And this is a deliberate feature. In fact, the whole of the restoration of the Middlesex Guildhall reflects that this court is designed for intelligent discussion of complex legal issues. It's not aimed to be adversarial like other trial courts. This gives the sense of openness, which is actually contrasted with some of the other features in the room, such as the oak panelling, the very traditional old paintings which you'll see hanging on the walls. Next in the tour, we moved on to another courtroom, courtroom two. This is the most modern courtroom, and one of the first things you'll notice here is the modern emblem of the Supreme Court above the judge's bench. The emblem was designed by Yvonne Holton, and it uses traditional symbolism from the four nations of the UK, portraying them in a delicate and modern way. At the back of the courtroom, you will find a large glass screen with the words, "Justice cannot be for one side alone, but must be for both." It's a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, and these sorts of phrases, these quotes, run throughout the court, a constant reminder of the rule of law and the role of justice. Moving on, we visited the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council. The Privy Council is composed of the same justices as the Supreme Court, and it hears appeals from 23 Commonwealth countries and 4 independent republics. Its decisions are not binding on English courts and are only persuasive precedent. If you remember from a previous episode about precedent, this is where the court must follow a previous decision or a previous decision of a higher court. Some things you will notice in this particular courtroom, firstly, is that there are a number of small flags which represent the Commonwealth countries. Secondly, the carpet has a large Order of the Garter symbol, showing a belt surrounding a circle with the words Oni soit qui mal y pense. And what does this mean? Well, the legend goes that the King of England at the time, Edward II, was dancing at a ball in Calais with a woman, apparently Joan of Kent, who was his cousin and daughter-in-law, possibly his mistress. Her garter slipped off, a part of her clothing slipped off, and the king picked it up. He tied it around his own leg. And when people started to laugh, the king said, Oni soit qui mal y pense, which in English means shame on him who thinks ill of it, or shame on him who thinks evil. The phrase became the motto of the Order of the Garter, an ancient association which was set up by the king, sort of a bit like the Knights of the Round Table. And the phrase features on the royal coat of arms, so anything to do with the royal family, you will see this phrase, including on the British passport. We could think of it as telling us to think that we must be good or to not judge people too quickly. Next on the tour, we moved on to the library, which is set on 3 floors and, as you might expect, houses a collection of law books and is for the exclusive use of the judges and their assistants. Again, you will see here modern and traditional design features, dark wooden shelves and red leather reading desks. They contrast with glass panelling with quotes chosen by the justices themselves, such as, "Man, when perfected, is the best of animals, but when separated from law and justice, he is the worst of all." And that's a quote by Aristotle. Throughout the tour, we were told about some significant cases which have been decided here. We also learned about how many judges sit on a case and the type of cases they hear. The tour guide had some handouts for us to see, including photos of the judges and information about the court structure in the UK, which helped us to understand better the role of the Supreme Court. I thoroughly enjoyed the tour and I highly recommend it to you if you are visiting London. Don't just take my word for it. If you go on TripAdvisor, for example, you'll be able to read some of the comments about the Supreme Court and you'll see what great reviews it gets. If you're after more information about the Supreme Court, check out their website. As I mentioned, it's supremecourt.uk. There are lots of resources, including past judgments and videos, which you can also find on their YouTube channel. So that brings us to the end of the episode. Don't forget that Podcast Pro members get access to further resources for this episode available at studylegalenglish.com/episode49. If you like this episode, subscribe to the podcast, like it, share it, send me your comments to info@studylegalenglish.com. You know I'd love to hear from you. Last week, I had a great message from Juliette, a French paralegal, who said, "I've just discovered your awesome Legal English podcast and I've subscribed as a Podcast Pro member because I really need to have access to more materials on your very good website. You really did a good job and I'm so glad that I found you and I really want to work with you to learn legal English and to help me to become fluent in this kind of English." So hi to Juliette, who is actually now taking legal English classes with me. So I'm very happy that you like the podcast and to be helping you achieve your legal English goals. Thank you everybody for listening and I'll see you next time.